This is a production of Cornell University.
FSA meeting, December 2nd, 2010.
The time is 4:46, and I'm calling the December 2nd meeting of the Student Assembly to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here. Unexcused. Oh, no, he's here. He's walking in right now.
Present.
Unexcused.
Here.
He's going to be late. He's also going to be late.
Here.
Here.
Here. Here. Here. Unexcused.
Here.
And she's also going to be late.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, that's it. All right. Moving on to approval of the minutes, November 18th meeting. You all received those in your email. Are there any amendments to the minutes? Seeing none? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. I think there are extras up front. We are now moving to open microphone for if there's anybody in the audience who would like to speak on something that is not on the agenda. Their agenda is up on the table if you'd like to grab one. But if there's anybody who would like to speak on something that's other than the agenda, please step forward. Please state your name and year for the record. All right, and go ahead, yeah, please sit down. Thank you. I think we're going to jump straight into questions here. Representative Desai, you have 1 minute. Or no, comments, you know.
Yeah, thanks for coming to talk to us. I know we talked about this at the CPT before, and just to give you an update on what's been going on, I'm
up to me. I just issued an email over to what the students have like a direct review about this. I've written an email to Tommy Bruce University at Gilbert Delgado, the university architect. I'm waiting for a response from them, but hopefully by the time the next semester rolls around, the questions will be wiped clean. You would have seen a resolution from the student summit today. We didn't have so much else going on the agenda both today and tomorrow, but just want to let you know the student summit is addressing this.
Yeah, please. Yeah, keep it short, though, because we have a... Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, as an assembly, we will be bringing forward a resolution. We'd love for you, obviously, to be a sponsor of it. And, you know, let's get this done by at least right at the first meeting on next semester. All right. Thank you for coming, Isaac. Is there anybody else in the audience who'd like to speak on something that's not on the agenda? Please. Please state your name and year for the record. Thanks. Zach, thanks for coming. I think the SA is going to be working hand in hand with the students from the Africana Studies Department, and I strongly encourage you to bring these concerns to President Gordon, who will be here at 5:10 today to present from the Student Assembly. So, and you will be put on the speakers list. We'll have somebody go around collecting names. So, Representative Danzer, 1 minute. Representative Smith.
I'm absolutely agreeing with Zach and Representative Danzer. I've only been here a year and a semester, and this is in that time the only time I can say I've heard where I've noticed the university has been able to do this without including students or faculty in the dialogue. they keep making the exact same thing they told me. Of course, I do probably be talking to them, and they're making their motivations behind the move. So there might be some things come out of this, so let's not jump to conclusions just yet. But I would also encourage everybody in the audience, don't just show up at any meeting I want you to be involved as food service throughout the year, because otherwise, things like this are going to keep happening. The more heavily you are involved throughout the year, the more you get, the more in depth, the more involved you're going to be in the plan-making process. Please join the committee, run for head of the app, and what it is, get involved.
And last is Representative Desai.
Trying to make sure as possible, Zach and Ross are coming in and voicing this. I guess I just want to say, first and foremost, on behalf of myself and Mike Finn, Janet will be tackling this first meeting in many months or so. You know, I heard you had a ton of selfish deadlines to try and deal with this from the state perspective. That being said, even though Janet will be addressing this, I want to make sure that it's clear that this is not a minority issue. This is a student issue that affects everyone on campus, not just someone in one or another community. I urge you to not just go through Javik with a minority representative, but to talk to John Madeline, Auditory Arts and Science representative, reach out to the Dean of Arts, talk to Dean Hubble, talk to professors and faculty that are outraged by this, not just students, and really think it's a collective effort, and you know, it seems like you're doing a great job so far, so I really hope we can move forward with LPE next semester.
All right, we're going to move on to the next portion of our agenda. It's Means Restriction Committee Report by the University Architect and the Director of Mental Health at Gannett. So please, both of you, come sit up. Now, I do have to note that, I'm sorry, we're already 8 minutes over our agenda here. We have President Scordon coming at 5:10. So, and since he's usually on a very tight schedule, since we have a lot of students who want to address him, I was wondering if, when he walks in, if we could put your presentation on hold, and if you have time to keep presenting after he leaves, is that all right with you all? Okay. All right. So. Dancer has it.
Mm-hmm. Speed guys. Come on.
Last year, one of the things that happened with President Gordon issued his op-ed very good way forward in the state of the community. One of the things that he called on the faculty to do was engage in an examination of the academic climate, the academic experience for students. So the faculty are engaged in that, and there are many other efforts on campus to look at overall climate concerns and the environment for students that are part of the sort of the foundation of our overall approach to mental health. When we look more specifically at individual students, one of the things we're trying to do, as Fox says, promote life skills and resilience. And here I'm thinking about the efforts of Cornell Minds Matter and departments on campus to help promote stress management and other skills, social connectedness that can help individuals deal with some of the inherent challenges of college life and life in general. The next one, Fox says, increase help-seeking behavior. One of the initiatives that this body played a large role in was the creation of the Real Students Are Real Stories program at Freshman Orientation, which was started at Bailey Hall, which was discussed and put forward as a resolution here last spring. And one of the messages that came out of that program is to tell incoming students that, as President's word has said, if you learn nothing else during your life, you learn to seek help. So that is an important message that we want students to all understand. Part of the overall approach is to identify students who are in need of care and support, because sometimes people don't know where to turn, and their friends may realize that something is going on with them, or their faculty members, or parents, or others. So we have a program called Notice and Respond, in which we're trying to educate the community how to recognize when someone may be in distress, how to talk to them, and where to refer them for help. The next box says providing mental and medical health services. Academic health services, we provide both counseling and medical services. We have walk-in and no appointment necessary, less talk hours around campus, so there's a number of resources in place. We also provide coordinated crisis management services through multiple units, including the 24-hour phone line that you can call for a consultation for yourself if you're concerned about other services. Crisis management mentoring program out of the university's office is central to this as well. The last box says restrict access to legal means. And here's where the issue of meeting restriction comes in. And I'm going to leave it to Gilbert Delgado to talk about this in particular, how it pertains to our unique situation on this campus with bridges. But from a public health perspective, restricting access to legal means, whether they be firearms, chemicals, or the ability to jump to your death from a great height, is an important part of a comprehensive approach to suicide prevention. And that's as well as an intelligent perspective from the national model. And so we're going to talk a little bit about where we are at Cornell.
Well, thank you so much.
So, Danza, why don't you try restarting the application? If you just continue with your presentation without a, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The chicken says that an act of supportive is very shortly thereafter, President Morton asked myself and climate on the to think about a possible solution that affects. Still provide mainstream, but with the goal of minimizing the visual impact, and if in fact there is some kind of visual impact, in fact, you can even enhance for that the bridge is kind of
Oh, okay.
So that was his target, very early on, visual way. Being the changing status is the dumbest thing you can do, but something they had to do very quickly. Is there something that we can do that would have to be artful, respect the natural environment, and also be effective? And that was the goal, and that's how it was feeling. Now, when we plotted out how much time it would take to do that, look at that. when we plotted that out, it would take at least 2 years to come up with a collaborative design problem that would be pretty far reaching. And get the municipal approvals necessary to get that done. But in the meantime, basic advice from our experts that hasn't changed the fences there for an entire year of protecting before was not an acceptable situation. So what we did was, it's just something off the shelf that we can solve very quickly as a holding idea until we have time to fully vet, design, and implement something that would be much more hardcore than competitive. So that's what the black sessions were about. We took out a challenge and put up something that was off the shelf, quickly to put up, but only a holding idea for maybe a year or maybe a little bit longer while we develop a design for something that hopefully can be much more artful. So that exploration started with looking at new descriptions around the world. This is a Munster Herd or a Switzerland, which is a net device. Washington, D.C., the attack on the Covington bridges, on the right being a simple urban furniture approach to main construction. And Auckland, New Zealand, another way to actually address the problem. Sydney Harbor in Australia, one of my least favorite ways to do it. Put the suspension bridge in Bristol, England. When we looked around the world, it was very clear to us there was really no example that would actually be something that we could use in it. Yeah. Not that we were going to create anything, but it even the entire approach in common. So what we realized very early on was that we have very special circumstances with small bridges in beautiful urban and in a beautiful landscape and bridges of varying scales. So we really couldn't say, well, we're going to hire a bridge/security consultant to address this problem. We interpreted the problem, looked for a client that had exceptional ability to resolve complex issues in a creative and perhaps even unexpected way. And that's how we move forward in terms of selecting an architect to actually do this. So the goal is to develop an effective, as the work, artful design to minimize the impact and satisfactory view of the surrounding natural area. That's our goal as we began the design process. This is exactly what I spoke to you about. The emergency channel sending half a meter to a period of time. The actual design of some glue would be the design and implementation of this more artful solution. And what that would actually do was a period of time that the black wire fences would have to take up the difference. So when we did search for design, the solicitation that went out put a strong emphasis on creativity, a very open solicitation language, and we also asked them to tell us a little bit about the design process. You know, what was what are some of the opportunities here? What are some of the challenges? And we asked five from the interview, and this showed a remarkable capacity to address the issues very well. The firm that we selected from out of Boston called Boston Stomp, we thought demonstrated this capability. This is a house that's in England made out of straight wood siding. You can see by the way the siding is cut, the way it's articulated, it's both even thickness to the wall, that it has something common and unexpected to transform into something much more beautiful. So the next thing I want to talk to you a little bit about is about the process, the design process, about how we get from here to there. There are seven bridges that we're talking about. They fall into three rough categories. One are the pedestrian bridges, two are the vehicular bridges, which are larger scale, larger weight, and third, in a bucket by itself, is the stone arch bridge. It has special iconographic attributes that, in fact, doesn't fit in class by itself.
Mr. Delgado, I hate to cut you off, but President Scorn just walked in the room, so if we just switch gears here briefly, and then we'll make sure to go back. So, thank you, by the way. So, President Scorn, welcome again to the Student Assembly meeting for the second time this semester. As usual, I see that you're scheduled here till 5:35, but we have a lot of students, I think, in the audience who would like to ask you questions probably regarding the Africana studies. But if you'd like to give a brief introduction and allow some time for both questions from the assembly and some time for questions from students, that'd be great. So, welcome. Thank you. Please. No, please go ahead. So, are we going to go straight to questions, you mean? All right. So, I think, Ray. Ray Mensa. First person on the speaker's list. Right there, yeah.
Sciences. As you know, the degrees are given through arts and sciences, and as you may or may not know,
There is no other unit in the university of this kind that gives degrees and hires faculty that does not report to a dean. So Agricon has an unusual, I would say, an anomalous reporting relationship. Now, I'm not arguing about the history of this. You're much more versed in the history than I'm ever going to be. And it may have made a lot of sense to have that kind of reporting relationship when Agricon was first set up. I find it hard to understand, very hard to understand, that the undergraduate students are admitted to arts and sciences if the degrees are given by arts and sciences, and if it's true that there's no other academic unit that hires faculty that does not report to a dean, why this would be such a radical idea. Secondly, it is not accurate, not true, that this was never discussed with the African faculty. When external review occurred here in 2005-06, this was discussed quite openly as an anomalous reporting relationship, and nothing was done at that time. And so there's been plenty of time to talk about this, to think about this. And I want to say that the reason I support the provost's decision is as follows. We've made a lot of changes in the university structure in the last year. I've eliminated two vice presidencies, changed staff in my office, changed my own compensation. Many other things have happened in the university. And this is the only recent decision that I am aware of, perhaps there's one that I'm missing, in which the provost has actually decided to put more resources into a unit and move it into what I believe is an oversight situation that's much better for the unit. It is not true that this unit has ever been independent or autonomous. It's always reported to a bureaucrat at one time or another. It reported to the provost. Now the suggestion is that it report to the dean. Everything else that was announced, I believe, and I apologize if I missed something, Jack, you know, I have a lot of respect for your opinion on many things. I don't believe any resources or any rights or privileges were changed in any negative way. Only positive things were announced by the provost, to my knowledge. Reactivating faculty hires, pushing ahead with the PhD program that, as you know, has been talked about for years and years, and making Africana's faculty hiring and all the other academic matters consonant with every other academic year in the university. So for those reasons, I'm supportive of the decision. Now, I know that it's maddening because I've got emails and also I just heard you say it, that, and you, I guess you replied, this didn't say it directly out of diplomacy, that you believe this was an autocratic sort of decision-making process. And I guess I would challenge you, Zach, or anybody here, to tell me if there's ever been more transparency and more openness about data and information at the university, as there has been during my administration. There are some decisions that are not going to be done by a vote. And since no resources were being taken away, resources were being added, and Africana's academic alignment is being made the same as every other year in the university, except that more resources are being added, I don't see that the decision-making process was in any way improper.
If I could just ask a follow-up.
Of course, of course.
I think there was a clear lack of transparency in the decision to remove King Butler, and this decision sort of paralleled that to me in that the community is affected, immediately affected, simply weren't engaged. And I think that's clear. While there was an external review 5 years ago before I was on the campus, that external review didn't imply that a decision was going to be made to move Africana Center immediately to a park in London. And the fact is the provost did not approach faculty there to say, this isn't the thinking, this isn't on the idea board. And the other point I want to make is if you look at the state of ethnic studies in the College of Arts and Sciences, in the Asian American Studies program, and in the LSP program, there's a clear trend that faculty in those departments, as to some extent, have real challenges in terms of getting tenure, especially those faculty who focus on race studies. If you look at Professor Clem Lies, Arturo Sanchez, and Ron Mize, two of whom I've personally experienced as teachers and can vouch for, they clearly were denied tenure. I don't know why, but I think the subject of their studies was a clear issue. Moving Africana studies under the dean adds a whole new level of bureaucracy. I think the security in having it go be under the provost was that we knew that that was the one person who you could defend the institution. Now having it under the dean means that Africana is going to be under a whole new set of politics. There's no security in that. We know that Cornell clearly has challenges in terms of recruiting faculty of color, particularly black faculty. I've heard statistics that there are only about 50. I can name the departments in arts and sciences in which there aren't black faculty. anthropology, philosophy, psychology, biology, you go on and on. This clearly, just to me, didn't involve any type of consultation in the community, and that's respectful, and it doesn't, it's not consistent with the history of the institution, and frankly, the decision to release the decision that the provost said he had in mind since last spring, on the last week of class, was disrespectful. That was the busiest day yesterday for me this week, and for him to call a meeting and make such a dire decision, which is disrespectful and inconsiderate. There's no reason why this decision couldn't have been released in September. He's clearly had this in his thinking. And I think that this reflects a trend that I've noticed around the university, where decisions reflecting black institutions, and I will say that, decisions reflecting black institutions are made autocratically. The decision to remove King Lovett was one, and frankly, we disagree on the reasoning behind that. This is another one. We know why Africana isn't in independent situations, because clearly, this university still remains challenged in the realm of academic freedom.
I agree with many of the things you said, but not all of them. And the vehemence by which you deal with them is of less interest to me than we have an open dialogue about the different issues. You just conflated, in my mind, four different things. Three of them, I think there are two of them definitely I agree with you on. We do have challenges in terms of diversity, especially retention and support of students of color. I would say goes beyond African Americans, but you may or may not agree with that. But I believe that we do have challenges both in terms of recruitment, but more in terms of retention and support. I totally agree with that, and we need to do better. Secondly, I know that we agree to disagree by Ken Glover. Ken Glover's situation, employment situation of a non-faculty member, was handled for many years in a way that was quite unusual, that he was left in the position much longer than people normally are. And I think that we have talked about that to a very great extent. I don't believe this is an example of that same kind of situation at all. The worst thing that you conflated, and unfortunately your colleagues applauded, was to use the term academic freedom. And please let's define our terms when we talk about academic freedom. When you say that you only have one person to convince for a faculty to get tenure, I think that's what you said. You said only have one person you have to deal with that is provost in the prior conditions. Not now you have another person.
Not for faculty tenure, but for the existence of the institution.
Okay, let me rephrase what you said. I apologize, I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about tenure. You're talking about the
existence of the institution.
The existence
of our institution ideally could say in 5 years that, well, this center would make a much better visitor center because it's on the fringe of the university. Let's move it to Lincoln Hall.
Okay.
That's what a dean could make a decision on. But the provost making that decision allows us to go straight to the top of the administration instead of having to fight the various levels of bureaucracy.
Okay, so let's continue to be honest with each other as we always are. What you just said was that the dean of arts and sciences could decide 5 years from now to turn the Africana Center into a visitor center. That's what you just said. And, of course, the provost can decide that, or I can decide that. But the provost has said that's not going to happen. There is nothing that's occurred during my administration, nothing that's occurred that's in any way taken away one program house, one faculty line. Ken Glover moving from one kind of employment to another has nothing to do with academic freedom. So I believe you're conflating the idea that there are some decisions that are not going to be made by a popular vote of students or faculty from academic freedom. I don't understand what you're talking about when you talk about academic freedom in this sense. The granting of tenure and the allowing of faculty to voice their concerns about anything without fear of employment actions, that's what academic freedom is. That's how it was originally defined, and I'm sure you would accept that. I challenge you to tell me what it is about this decision that puts any of that under threat. Not a single faculty line has been touched. More faculty lines are going to be added. Nothing is going to happen to the center except to leave it where it is. I told you, not you, but 4.5 years ago when I began being president, I was asked about the program houses, that we did not touch the program houses. That's how the review came out. The program houses are supported. Is that not correct?
I disagree. I think that
you disagree, meaning that you believe.
And I don't think this is a debate between me and you. I mean, there's other people who want to speak. But frankly, if I could just make this one point, is that
this goes beyond the surface level policy. The decision to remove King Hunter, which has become a focus of this discussion, to me, reflects a decision to go against, you know, having Ujma be a housing center around political consciousness. In a sense, the university did touch Ujma. It decided that the programming that was happening there was unacceptable. Your argument, the unprecedented argument, that no, that I do believe in term limits, has not been applied anywhere else in the university. Anywhere else. And on the issue of academic freedom, my point was simply that in the department, or the program rather, of ethnic studies that exists in arts and sciences currently, faculty there who write on issues of race are constantly on the chopping block as it comes to their review and their tenureship. That will only be heightened if Africana moves into arts and sciences, in my opinion.
I'm graduated first in your opinion, because I think that what you just said is being factual.
So, if we can move on to a few other questions, I would like to thank Zach for bringing up a very knowledgeable assessment of this issue, and I think he represents, in large part, the community that's sitting with him. I think one point which resonates very strongly with me, and I think among the assembly, is that sometimes there are decisions which are made which haven't been consulted with student bosses and students who are involved. And I'm not saying that it's intentional, but it does occur. I think this is an incident of that. I think the university refugee policy is the best example. I think there was some of that in the university recognition decision to change the university recognition policy. I think there was some of that by the way the university was addressed and cooperated. And I think that one, the lack of dialogue is something that resonates strongly among this assembly. I guess I'll move on to the next speaker and then
represent that. I need to about that. Yeah. And for him, turning my back to you, but I want to call upon Zach and others here. I want to say again my point of view. You don't have to accept it, you don't have to agree with it. I want to again tell you my point of view that in this particular case that we're talking about, Africana, not Ken Barber, that no assault was made on any aspect of the academics of this unit. In fact, more resources were being put forward. It's still in the college that you have been in anyway, because it's where every undergraduate student has been admitted, it's where every undergraduate degree comes from. And it's the only case in the university where even the highest faculty has not been reported to a dean. So I honestly have to tell you that it would not have occurred to me that this, what I would consider to be a change of a novel reporting relationship that's been discussed for at least 4 years, whether or not you were here 4 years ago, including discussion with all the faculty at that time at Africana, where this sort of thing where you would go back to the student assembly and discuss it again, it just wouldn't have occurred to me. It would have occurred to me if we had never had a conversation with the internal consultants for a year. And I want to say one other thing, and forgive me for taking more time. I know there's more questions from the essay. I very much want to hear more from you and talk more with you about this than the 20 minutes that I have tonight. I have a 6 o'clock phone call that I have to make tonight. If you want to meet after that, I'm glad to do it. Or if it's a very stressful week and you want to meet next week or something, like your Monday, Tuesday, we have board meetings through Friday in New York. I want to know that I'm available to be talking to you. And the fact that I'm going to be still here for this phone call, I don't want people to interpret that I'm not interested in having further dialogue. So forgive me for turning my back to you on that.
And I guess just so students can be a little bit more transparent about the decisions
regarding that. I'd like to say, can you elaborate a little bit more on how you feel this move will enable Africana to recruit faculty more efficiently, be able to bring in more professors and then offer the tenure and kind of expand the diversity that we are looking for in the staffing, not only in Africana, but hopefully across North Carolina in general.
Sure. And before I do, let me make one other comment, and forgive me for being challenging, but I feel very strongly about my statement about transparency. Let's, the SA and Vice President Murphy and the GPSA and me, look back over the 5 years that I've been president, 4.5 years I've been president, at decisions that affected students directly and whether we had dialogue and consultation. I'd ask Susan, and if you'd be so good as to help me find what those decisions were, let's look at what they were and let's find out the facts. If you're right, then we absolutely need to change the way we do things. If you're wrong, then you have to recognize that you're wrong. So let's go back and see what the decisions were and see if we can agree those things that were directly affecting students and see what they are. Now, in terms of what the, and I'm glad to put the time in, and once again, I apologize for my back to you because I know it's your issue as well. I'm glad to talk to you more about this tonight or at a different time. This is a bad time. I just have to be in a conference call between 6 and 6:30. In terms of what I think, the reason I agree with the provost's actions is that the provost has a reduced staff around him. It's not just a human being. It's someone to oversee the unit. And despite some rhetoric that I've heard over the time that I've been here, Africana has never been an independent autonomous unit. It's always reported to someone, as everything the university does. And so the question is, where will more attention be paid to Africana in terms of faculty hiring, in terms of student opportunity? And the only answer at this or any university is that the standard way of doing this that's proven for decades and decades and decades is to have a champion for the unit in the form of a dean to whom the unit reports. That's why every other academic unit that hires faculty, including some of the most distinguished units in the world of their type, report to deans. There is no other unit of this type that reports. So I guess I would turn it around. What would be, well, this isn't working, but, oh, what would be the evidence that having the anomalous sort of relationship to the provost, the only one in the university, would foster more movement along a channel of work that's not done by the provost office? It's the dean and the department head, or in this case, a unit director, that identifies people to be recruited, that recruits them, that sets up the packages, that brings them in, and that's where the real action is at the university. It's not in Day Hall. And so that's the rationale for it. Most importantly, and this is very important to me, I'd like to go back and look at the issues that you feel were student-related issues and the ones that Susan can identify, and the GPSA as well, and see whether we can look over this together. I'm willing to roll my sleeves up and put the time in with you. I don't believe it's the case that there's a trend toward autocratic decisions and less transparency. I just don't buy it.
Also the expansion department, and a lot of other smaller organizations with smaller departments within the college. I think a fear that that method is that I have to go, is what happens if the Africana Center and Africana Studies no longer bring as many people to the university because it's not providing as big of a function as the bigger departments in the college program sector, such as economics, government, those big main programs. Are you going to start cutting funding? Is something going to happen where we can't really deal with it? Because all of these things have been cut. Even with student sentiment that really is angry and wants to change it, we weren't able to do anything to affect the administrative
decision. Okay. Please forgive me for what I'm going to say now. It's just from the heart. I'm also angry. Please look around you at what's happening in our country and our world. We have reduced the staff workforce of this university 9%. 9% in the last 2.5 years. Just think about that for a moment. Think about the people's lives disrupted by layoffs. Some of that was with an early retirement program. These are very, very challenging times. There are many departmental consolidations, closing of branch libraries. These are things that are painful and very hard to deal with. If there was any intention of reducing support for Africana, if there was ever any intention of removing program houses or doing any of these things that people are very understandably and justifiably concerned about, this is the time that it would be happening when we're in such austere financial conditions. But that's not what's happening. That is not what's happening. So unless you and others are impugning my honesty or the honesty of the provost, what has just happened is that Africana is being given more resources to hire faculty with a push, a hard push, to finally establish a doctoral program where it'll have continue to have its own graduate field as it has constituted its own graduate field. It's just the opposite of what you're saying. Of course, all over the university, forgive me, I'm a little emotional about this, all over the university, we are downsizing, but we're not downsizing or touching Africana. I'll tell you again, I've eliminated 2 vice presidencies from these universities and all the staff who work for those people. I've downsized my salary, my office staff, so has the provost. This is not just a little blip on the curve. This is the worst recession the country has seen since the 30s. And yet, in this climate, we are saying we're going to add faculty lines to Africana, push ahead to a PhD program. And so we're really down to a matter of credibility. If the student body of the university, including the students in front of me and behind me, are impugning my credibility or integrity or that of the provost, then we have a very serious problem. If not, then please look at what is actually happening here. This is a unit that has not been touched for resources, to which resources are going to be added, as they should, not for a political reason, but because I firmly believe, and the provost firmly believes, that the Africana Studies and Research Center is a very, very important unit and needs to flourish and prosper. But this is in a setting in which, I remind you again, 9% of the staff workforce has been reduced, and the rate of faculty hiring last year was the second lowest in 3 decades. This is a very, very different situation. The country has nearly a 10% unemployment rate, and so, of course, things are very scary, but what we're doing is actually pushing more resources toward a unit that we highly value because we highly value it. And the only thing that's changing, and it's a change for the positive, is putting the oversight of the unit in the largest college in the university that accounts for 1/3 of the faculty of the university, of this Ithaca campus, rather, because that's the way every other unit that hires faculty works. So I really hope we can have more dialogue about this so I can sort out what 3 different things I'm hearing. One is that maybe there's a lack of trust in the administration. That would be very upsetting to me, but I want to hear about it and I want to know what you're thinking. Secondly, that there's not enough consultation with the students on issues that impact the students. And I've just charged in front of you my vice president to work with me to identify those circumstances and see if we can get to the bottom of whether you're right or I'm right or something in between. And then thirdly, there's this really separable issue of whether we are supportive of Africana. I am very supportive of program houses and Africana. I admit to Zach now, as I have many times in the past, that we have a big hill to climb in terms of our support, recruitment, retention, and success of underrepresented minorities on this campus. This is not an example of what this is. It's something you may want to talk about the recognition policy.
Thank you.
I guess I just want to make one statement about that, Natalie. We began a discussion about the recognition policy last spring with the leaders of the three councils. It did not go beyond that in the spring. And as we were preparing for a conversation with the board in the spring, they asked if we would please delay that because they did not have a chance to talk with their leaders or their members. So we did that and said we will take it to the board in October. So there was a five-month period in which they were at work. I think in the fall, Vince had a very appropriate point that we had not yet come to the student assembly because we were focused primarily on the Greek community in that discussion. And I said to him as soon as he said that, he was right because you guys provide a lot of the funding related to the other kinds of activities. And so that dialogue and work began in September. And you know, as you know, we had quite an open forum. But the leadership within the Greek community was well aware of what we were considering in the recognition policy for many, many months before it went to the board. So again, I think we may need to have help with how do we get that out to as broad a membership, particularly in the IFC. And I acknowledge that Alan and his board had a huge challenge with 39 different chapters and about a third of the men, and that's much more difficult than it is for the women in Panhel or the 14 small organizations in the MGLC. But again, I don't think it's fair to state there was no opportunity for student input.
Can I ask, in summary, if you or you would like to talk more about this, Zach, if you're comfortable to send me an email and let me know. I'm glad to wait in my office after this conference call if you want to talk tonight. If tonight's not good and this time isn't good, we can talk whenever you want to talk. I have some activities over the weekend. Sometimes I can meet you. I'm willing to do it if you want to. It's up to you. And in terms of working through this issue that Mr. Desai raised about whether there's a pattern sort of emerging of us, me, Susan Murphy, and others, not consulting the students on student-related issues, I very much want to run this to ground. I don't want to run it to ground just before you're taking finals or whatever, but, you know, we work 12 months a year, and let's find a way to do this together. If you want to do it at the beginning of the spring term, whatever you want to do, let's not let this just sit as an apparent disagreement between us. Let's look at the facts and get to the bottom of it and change procedures as we need to do. And in terms of the Africana issue, I'm at your service. I just have to go do this conference call now.
Thank you. Okay. All right, moving back to Means Restriction Committee report. Sorry about the delay.
I'm almost finished. Where we left it off last time, we had talked about organizing the seven bridges into three different types of bridges. Lightweight pedestrian bridges, heavy vehicular bridges, which will require a different type of response, right? And then the Stone Arch Bridge, which in itself is an icon and has other noteworthy attributes that would require a special treatment of it. So these three different types of bridges, during a stage of design called pre-schematics, we will do three different variations or three different alternatives to the design. So I'll stand up for just a second so you can actually see what we're talking about, because this is where we plan for the future student involvement. We're about here right now. We just completed what's called a site analysis, which is just basically looking at different sites, what are the attributes that are relevant to kickstarting design, just made it better. Then we will begin the three different types that we talked about. We will do three different options. Why three different ones? So we will never do one jump underneath the bridge. One might be a net underneath the bridge, one might be something vertical, a third might be something you can't even imagine. It. That's how we're hiring creative designers. So using those three different variations of the three basic types, we will then have a major rollout. This will be around February 2011. Both on campus
both with our other stakeholders in the city that they have, and basically present this formally to several bodies. Then at some point, after that design of submittal, we will actually select one path for each one of the seven races, right? And take those and finally finalize them. At the end of that, it's called the schematic design. We will again reach out through moment for both on campus and the city of Ithaca, so basically that's it. And then that schematic design will be presented to the common council of the city of Ithaca and the trustees for approval. And if they are approved, those are the ones that we will design. So we don't have anything to show you yet,
but that is the overall process and the milestones for student involvement.
And I would just like to thank you for this presentation. I know that the students of the committee will send them in blanket. And Ms. Marshall, I love you. Transparency working with students and all mental health issues has truly been exemplary. I think that transparency is an important aspect, as this previous discussion demonstrates. And we are, I think, extremely motivated to help work. And, you know, whatever you need from students, but the FAQ for, you know, to ensure that the bridge design work is smoothly and students know about it. And we're all people as well.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
I wanted to ask a question about this in this context.
Sandy, I just want to make sure I understand your question. So you're wondering about notice to respond and how we can reach out to students more and get some of that training and education to students?
Yes, it sounds like the first person that usually sees you is like your friends, and if their friends don't really know.
Yep. Great, thank you for that question. Some of the research that we've done has identified exactly what you're describing, which is that when students are struggling, the people that they're most likely to turn to are their friends first, their parents second, and the staff and faculty much less likely often. Although we are often in a position, as friends are, to recognize when someone may be struggling but aren't ready to initiate help seeking. And so that's a really important phenomena, and that's why we're trying to develop these strategies that Gannett and Minds Matter and residential programs are putting in place. Let me describe to you a couple of specific things. One is that this spring, over the summer, we developed a notice and respond version. We had it for faculty and staff, and now we have a version for students, and it's called Friend to Friend. And we did this with funding from the College of Engineering. Any first-year students from engineering here? So in the Engineering 1050 class, which is a required program, our class for all first-year engineering students, we went in and did the friend-to-friend program. So the engineering gave us the opportunity to go in and do that and to offer a session on stress management, which about half of the class is utilized, but all of them went through the friend-to-friend program. We're now looking for ways to take the friend-to-friend program to other groups, student groups on campus, because this was the pilot phase. We just rolled it out this fall. An example of groups that we've worked with in the past are the fraternities and sororities, where we've gone into fraternity chapter meetings on Sunday evenings and tried to present information on how to recognize someone who's struggling and may need help. We're interested in knowing what your suggestions are about how we can take this to students as well. So we're very interested in that kind of dialogue. We've been having it in the Council on Mental Health and Welfare, which Vince and others are involved in.
So I just want to put it out there. There are four people on the speaker's list. I'm willing to cut off the discussion at dusk at 5:55 because there's a lot on the agenda. So next is Neil.
The one by the law school, between College Town and the university.
Okay, awesome.
Representative, this is more of a comment than a question. When you go to do the student forums, like community public forums, for these, I would highly recommend specific outreach for those communities that are especially affected by mental health issues and suicide epidemics, including the LGBT community and similar communities on campus that especially need an extra level of help to make sure that we're taking care of them.
Thank you, Matt.
Representative Smith.
I understand that you're talking particularly about means restriction, and the bridges. I'm wondering what suggestions or recommendations have been made, have you guys made to residential programs about RA training, RHD training, incorporating these things? Because I really feel like, already there are a lot of topics that are covered for RA training, but you know, this is something that's so serious, degrees of importance or something, but I do really think that this is something that's very important. It should be discussed with them. And I think how many of you have asked the question, what are other those responding to engineering school, what other programs are you guys suggesting that the other means to do? Why are the other colleges not taking any steps right now to implement more programs like those responding to?
Thank you for that question. And I would say a few things about this. One is that we are in conversation with academic leaders in all the colleges to figure out, can we take notice and respond into other academic units? I mean, one of the challenges is that some colleges have required courses for first-year students where you could bring something like this into, others do not. But the overall issue is, how do you bring this information to as many students as possible, whether it's in the colleges or through residential programs? We have a joint program between Gannett and residential programs for planning a training for RAs and RHDs. We enhanced that training this summer, and that was before we had the friend-to-friend program, which we now will be using next year with the RAs for training. We've been looking at the Real Students, Real Stories 2 program. You know, the one week that was in Bailey Hall was the part one. There's a part two. We rolled that out on a pilot basis in the residence halls. We didn't get a lot of attendance with that. It was later in the semester after prelims were hitting because we didn't get the production finished till then. We really want your input. We need student input about how best to reach students. So we're very interested in bringing this more broadly to as many students as possible, but we need guidance on what works best for students.
All right, we have reached 9. So thank you for coming today. And always, we have one question from the audience, I guess we'll make time.
My name is Vincent Yelda. I'm a senior. I've been here this is my fourth year here. I was here for 3 years and no one moved. I just have to go up. I'm a little offended almost because it seems to me that people think that me and my peers don't have the ability to, get a hold of their own lives, and a lot of the talk is about, I hear suicide prevention and means restriction and everything's sort of in the negative. How come we don't have like a happiness promotion program? Why does that have to be in the negative? Why are we contracting people to make fences that look like, I don't really think we need fences. Why don't we have money going to, kids do dress and things like that because it's large, really stressful things happening in their lives. It's not a little thing. Take money from the donation gap and, put it in financial aid so kids aren't stressed about the cost of housing, or put it in the program. Anything just to, where's the happiness promotion? Where's the positive in all this? I'm really bothered by all the negativity sort of issues.
Thank you very much for your perspective, which I know is shared by others. You didn't see the first part of my presentation. I think it's been
Okay. Well, I also did a thumbnail sketch. One of the things I would say two things about this. One is that we absolutely need to be doing more to promote a positive, supportive environment, cultivating wellness and health among students overall, and looking at the overall climate on campus to make it as supportive as possible. At the same time, we know that there are individuals who are former students, who are members of our community, who have mental health problems. And oftentimes, most often, individuals who die by suicide have an underlying mental health problem. Let me give you an example. An individual who has bipolar disorder could be someone who, in a temporary situation, in a manic episode, may have suicidal impulses that will pass, as their condition remedies. But for those vulnerable individuals who are depressed or have a psychotic disorder, who may have the impulse to take their own lives, that having restricting access to the means to die by suicide, the evidence suggests that we can save lives by that way. And we're concerned about the overall aesthetics of our campus. I'm a native, I grew up here, I went to Cornell, I value the beauty of these gorges, the restorative benefits of the natural environment is something that we need to cultivate. What you're seeing on the bridges right now is a temporary situation where we put these fences up as a way to try to reduce the likelihood that someone would take their own lives. Correct. For the first 3 years that you were here, we didn't have any suicides, but we had 6 suicides last year. We had 3 from in one gorge in 1 month. That's known as a cluster, the contagion effect. And all the advice that we received from researchers was that in order to reduce the likelihood of a further deaths and having further traumatization of the community, from many people who have witnessed these tragedies, that this was an important step to take.
Thank you. And at that time, we have run out of time. Then I encourage you to come talk to us or talk to Dr. Marshall about any of these feelings, because we can't put you in touch with every meeting, put you on a certain meeting, all the community needs. So thank you for coming again, and thank you.
All right.
You have it in front of you. My inspiration for this resolution was twofold. One is because there was a clear desire for more people to be on the assembly. Threefold. Two, that we have more issues than we can possibly address at our current number. We have more committees. We're all on so many different committees and are forced to focus on so many different issues that we can't adequately address each issue. And three, due to the elections, the popular elections, unless a candidate runs for the president or the vice presidential slate, they're less likely to win an at-large seat. Technically, they could, but just the nature of the elections, the presidential, vice presidential candidates, people are more attuned to listening to their platform than if you're just saying I'm running at large. Thus, it usually happens that the president and the vice presidential slates are always going to get more votes because people are interested in those positions more than just undesignated at large. So this resolution allows a student to run at large, represent every student in the university, and not have to try and compete with somebody who's running for president, VP, because I think on designated at-large and VP and president should be completely separate. And that's what my resolution does for three seats. And then I added one freshman seat because I would say that freshmen probably have the most issues to deal with on campus, whether it's programming, housing, academic advising. I mean, there's so many issues. And we had 23 students run for three spots this year. We had 30 run last year. So I think that they could there is the demand there for one more seat. And I guess the last issue is the only real counter argument I heard to this resolution is that the assembly, each representative, would have less time to speak. I think that addressing the issues and you know, maybe having discussions outside of this forum will be more productive than having people, you know, reiterate the same point over and over again, which often happens. So that's my 4 minutes. Yeah, so the first question is a good one. The way the resolution is structured is that it allows essentially the president and vice president, obviously, to hold one of the at-large seats. And then I felt that it was important to keep two more seats open for the next two people who receive the most votes, whether it could be either, you know, two of the presidential candidates, two of the vice presidential candidates, purely because I think that these, if they're motivated to run for president, EVP, then they should, you know, they shouldn't, it shouldn't be like a one-shot deal, like you either win and or you're off the assembly. And then also, though some people may have issues with this, I think it would also discourage current SA members from running if it were just president and EVP who'd be elected, because current SA members usually want to continue their terms and they'd be discouraged if it was simply because if they knew that if they may not get back on the assembly. And that same thing goes for non-SA members. I think there was one amongst you, I'm not going to say her name, she can do it herself, but who would have run as well for an SA position if these had been open, but because it wasn't open, she didn't run for the position. So.
Thanks for that. That's about time. And some of this is
So I think the future is, so if we have two people that are reserved, then there's a whole lot of people that can be invested.
Four.
And so we then get
two. No, so the way it works is that you have four seats reserved for those running in the presidential and vice presidential elections. Thus, president takes one seat, EVP takes the second seat, and then everybody in that election, the next two who have the most votes would take the next two, and then there would be three more separated that you cannot fill the last three seats if you ran for president or executive vice president. You have to run undesignated.
Very few graphic graphs. We
have less than ability to keep controlling the memory for a long time. And I think that speaks to institutional memory of an organization. And the fact that you can have more people pursuing their ideas continuously for a longer period of time will allow them more fluid as they. And so when you have people who are running two term people, you know, you often have fusion of what is running to the companies like after days all every day on run after a long 4 year assembly members really sleep a lot having certain friends. So I would think that especially a really important decision.
I'm there as part of adding the agency, so we do need additional voices and additional manpower. But what I do want to change is that I think adding that diversity creates kind of a member without constituency, member without a cause, if you would. And what I think we really need to see are people that have constituencies the way, you know, I, the LGBT rep, have a constituency that I specifically serve, even though I'm elected at large. I know that when it comes down to a meeting, I'm going to try to call the LGBT community as often as I can, just remember we're speaking with, as you all noted. So I'd actually like to offer an amendment. I motion to reinsert the word 8, the word 8, where it is crossed out, and remove the word 12. And then add a sentence before that sentence, so before the initiation, that says, three voting members of the SA will be elected by and from the class of the different, by and from the, what is having seven grades, or by the sophomore, junior, and senior class. And this way, the residents will be adding one representative for the freshmen, as well as one representative for the sophomores, one for the juniors, and one for the seniors. And what I think this does is it makes sure that the sophomore representative will deal with issues directly with the sophomores, and junior representatives will be dealing with a lot more college, county issues, etc. So, it's reinserting the word eight, and then in the right before that sentence where the word eight is, including the word three voting members of the SA will be elected by and from the sophomore, junior, and senior class respectively.
May I have a
freshman, sophomore?
No. So we're including the local language that adds freshman, and this is just saying three voting teams, so it's just sophomore, junior, senior. Yeah, the freshman.
Okay. Right, so this will still be adding 4 seats.
Correct.
Okay. Does that mean the amendment is in page 1 where 8 was crossed out and 12 was added. The amendment is to strike 12 and put that 8 in right before that. So 3 voting members of the elected by the
may I have a few seconds to respond?
Yes.
All right. I think if the ESA is all right with this amendment, I wouldn't mind. But I think we all have our positions on this, so I would go ahead and call the question on the amendment. Since it's not my amendment, I can go ahead and do that. So I'm going to go ahead and call the question on the amendment. Two-thirds.
So, again,
promote vote bills. Vote bills.
Yes. Okay. So we are in. We have Okay. So by a vote of 9-1, the motion fails, and your back on the votes for the amendment. And the next person on the list is Peter Gittman.
So just to let you know, before, so my sophomore year and last year, I was an at-large representative, undesignated. Historically, the SAs had undesignated at-large seats exactly like this for, I don't know, maybe you can get Ari to tell us, but for many, many years, we've never had that issue.
Thank you.
There is an issue of communication, right?
I was under the understanding that you are not supposed to pay the
It's postponed, I think. It's the same thing. Postponed. Yeah, postponed. Yeah. May I respond before we vote? All right. I mean, I would just say that this resolution has been in front of you all for like 3 weeks now, and nobody has come up to me to talk about it. I know I've spoken with a number of you about it, but nobody with any reservations has come up with me, and I would have been open to changing it, but nobody came up to me. So I would say I would disagree with that sentiment. Faith in the people who are running, and they're running because they have a cause to come under this assembly. And I yield the rest of my time to represent the Yazwick. The Yazwick, so.
we are going to vote those people who are in favor of voting on the article 4, please raise your placards and once you've heard of the
this is a call to question.
This is a vote to vote.
Oh, this is a vote to vote?
Yes. This is a vote to vote. Just one way. Okay. We need two-thirds to pass.
That's not my vote. No, this is a call to question.
I'm voting to vote.
This is a vote to vote.
Yes. Please keep in mind.
Before we have to
I mean, it would probably be best to pass it this semester. The office probably agree with me, so.
Okay, so,
point of order, we have a call to question. We have a call to question?
Yes, yes,
okay. And a second? So I'd like... Oh, okay. The resolution adding more seats. When would it have to be done by?
For the election.
For this semester. For next year.
Well, the election information has to be out on the first day of classes. And usually we try to get it out when dorms open. So that's why it needs to be in the semester before.
So essentially, it would not be possible to amend it for this upcoming election.
The majority of all voting members, not majority of all.
7. It needs 14, so if the chair votes, then it passes. If the chair votes...
No, it needs all members, not all members.
It needs all members, not all
members.
Yes, it does not. I would motion to revote because the people who abstained did not know that rule. We'll vote to vote.
We're going to vote to vote. I'm giving you all. I'm sorry. So, vote. Most people who like to vote, so three votes. Please raise your flags.
Because the assembly members didn't understand what an abstention meant. It passes. That's 2/3. No, 2/3 of those seated here for that.
All right, so we are now going to have a second roll call vote. Now we're going to have a second roll call vote. Woman, obviously.
Agar?
Yes.
Andrews?
Yes.
Madad? Block?
Yes.
Sander?
Shields!
That's fine.
Yes.
Bang?
Yes.
Ben?
Yes.
Gatlin?
Yes.
Gorahani?
Yes. Brock, yes.
Jenkins?
Yep.
Kay?
Yes.
Kerr?
No.
Bernardo? Nicoletti?
Would you like to reject that motion?
So this resolution is probably not going to pass in the next 18 minutes, but I figure we'll take this time to, guys. So I figure we're going to take this time to maybe just discuss the resolution a little bit, discuss what the election committee came up, and if anyone wants to, you know, make any requisite changes, you know, tomorrow once we get to that meeting, we'll discuss it there. Does anyone want me to represent the resolution? Has everyone been able to look through the election document? Sure. So I guess let's start with eligibility, okay? The first minor change was that because of an issue with the registrar's office, we can't actually ensure that they're fully registered students by the time the election runs through, especially during the fall. So we just got rid of that language. And basically said the candidates must attend classes on the campus for the duration of the term. Which effectively means they're going to be registered students, but we can't verify that. It's just going to cause that. On top of that, I mean, I guess I'll get to a ticket system afterwards, but there's basically eligibility about ticketing. Effectively, it says, you know, if you're running on a presidential ticket, you must identify this during the petitioning period, and then every individual ticket must meet their own individual petitioning requirements as individual members. Okay. No worries. If you flip to page 2, I don't think there's any changes on page 2. If you flip to page 3, actually, under electronic communications, we effectively deleted the first clause, which states candidates or associates knowingly acting on their behalf shall remain with standing persons unknown to themselves. The rationale for getting rid of that clause was effectively that we can't police external venues, right? So we can't police things like Facebook, things like other kind of different media other than Cornell and email. And the second issue is that within the campus technology information kind of website, CIT effectively states that spamming is not a violation of any campus kind of rules or governance. So it just seems kind of a little out of line for us to, or as an elections committee, to police that, especially if CIT does not think that that's a violation of kind of the use of their email system. So, and then in terms of campaign finances, we made a modification regarding essentially if you're running on a presidential ticket, you can't exceed $100. And then all undesignated at-large candidates can also use up to $100 for their elections. That way you make it fair for you to run as an undesignated at-large or as a single candidate as opposed to just, you know, presidential ticket. If you flip to the next page, you know, we have basically a bunch of different kind of, especially under restrictions, because previously kind of ticketing was restricted, so essentially the language there allows that change. A lot of this language is borrowing from a previous resolution proposed by, or previous election rules proposed by Mike McDermott, in which he outlines, you know, qualifying candidates and presidential tickets as entities, and each entity is restricted. So, i.e., one ticket cannot try to go for another ticket, or so on and so forth. We flip to the next page. Essentially, that's really, I think, the crux of what a lot of contentions will probably be about. Essentially, it's the reintroduction of. I think it's very different. The first thing I want to say to make a large disclaimer is that it's actually somewhat different than the original slate system that we've had in the past, whereby people would run as a slate, and then, you know,
effectively you would vote for that slate, which encompasses both individuals. The new idea that we're looking at is kind of more of a ticket system where you can break up that ticket into individual pieces as well. So let's say you like the president of one ticket and you like the vice president on another ticket, you effectively can actually do that and you can vote, you know, whatever way you want. But it allows people to kind of run together also. The other major change that we have falls on the second to last page. It deals with the challenges, and it says effectively the committee as a whole can issue a challenge to a candidate or a ticket by majority vote. This effectively came up because members, individual members of the committee cannot do so, but we feel that, you know, given the concerns of especially talking about kind of, you know, policing candidates, making sure the candidates were within well within their bounds, or making sure that minor violations were stopped during that process, the election committee effectively could go and regulate that aspect of it. And the last one is basically we just specified that if it takes a two-thirds majority to at the challenge review meeting, so I'm looking at 6 on the last page, part B, if any substantiated violation or combination thereof alter the fairness of the election to the extent the challenge and it should be disqualified by a two-thirds majority. It was never specified by what kind of majority that they would be ruled out. So that's about it.
All right.
Yeah, in the past, the way they set it up was you had a slate, so you had a president and you had a vice president, and you voted for that slate, and that was it.
Okay, so there, like, this is not that
No, basically you can break it up. There actually, you know, there's a resolution, there's some amendments going around that say, you know, you can place a disclaimer also within, you know, once you look to vote, there'll be a disclaimer that says you can effectively break up the ticket if you want to. And it's very, very clear that you kind of can vote for whoever you want on the president and the executive vice president. All that will be different is that, you know, basically it's kind of just like a formatting thing, right? So you'll have your name, let's say you're the president, and you'll have Y person as your vice president. It might say, you know, your name, you know, and then under like brackets or something like that, your name, X name, ticket. And so people will understand that you guys are running on as a ticket, but people will also understand that you can vote for whoever you want in each race.
So, clarification, this is and I haven't heard the president say that he's not passing this, but I would assume that if we don't pass this, if we don't get a quorum to pass it, then you simply revert back to the election. But we have to pass it by the end of the semester, because, again, the election period will do a special class, so it has to be done. But amendments can be made and all that sort of letter. Essentially, we are going to discuss this until we move forward.
Two hours or 3 to 2 more.
Right. I think that's partly the idea of why we're allowing the elections committee as a whole to challenge individuals, because prior to that, we had no power, right? Especially if you were a member of the elections committee, you could not explicitly, you could not submit a challenge, right? And I think that that's part of it. And I think that's a good medium between, you know, what we do now and the extreme whereby we're literally on the crawl of finding people that break stuff. Because as a director of elections, I'm here to facilitate the election, but you can't have a single director of elections just going to North Campus all the time and just making sure posters are there, right? Or making sure and policing, you know, every single candidate, especially in large elections where there might be, you know, 20 to 30 candidates. I think it's beyond the means of both the elections committee and the director of elections to do so, and I think this is a good kind of compromise there. You're talking about campaign financing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That really quickly, or sure. So I'll be pretty brief. I think the first point, to your point about running an effective student assembly, I think that's you know fairly valid because I think we have a pretty functioning student body. But I think as the director of elections and as I told my committee, I think we're there to try to ensure as many people run as possible and people are as engaged as possible in the elections process, right? And I think that you fail to find many people that said that the election whereby we, when we had slaves, was not one of the most, you know, kind of exciting elections ever. We had more than, you know, 10, probably 25% more voter turnout that year than last year. And I think that if you think about just making sure that as many people are engaged as possible in the elections, as many people run as possible, then from that perspective, it really works out. The other thing about kind of latching on, and I think that's something we definitely address, and I think that that's something that, you know, if you really don't think someone's effective, that's why you can split the ticket. If you don't have to vote for that vice presidential candidate, if you don't think they're good.
We no longer obviously have that problem. I can see with the president and vice president that we have today. body like the epidemic acts right now. You have to have places like UVA, UVA, and Emory. All of these places, their voting process has no place. There's no real reason for us to have tickets. We're not like the Congress or senators, or excuse me, we're not like the candidates running for president of the United States. We are all students who are working to better the student body. There's no real faction on the ideas that we're running for, so there shouldn't really be any diversion in political creation between different candidates. So basically, we would be the only, not only Ivy League, but the only university student body that has ticketed basically for show. Not to throw you over the bus, the director of elections last time said that we were created ticketing so it could be a one-on-one election. I don't really think the purpose of elections are really to memorize the student assembly. I tried my hardest as VPOPR to really PR us on different aspects besides our elections, and I don't think that it's fair to create a popularity contest just for more students to vote. If students are interested in student government, they will vote because they're interested and they will vote for the best people possible, not because they like two people better than another. It's the people running for specific positions that really create the best possible student assembly, and I think that would be a fair with the student assembly we have.
The time is 7 o'clock. I will refer back to the same speaker's list when tomorrow we start the session. Yes, go ahead.
And I ran the ball. It's hard.
sir.
Here it is.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.